Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to a special RightStream Friday broadcast in honor of St. Patrick's Day. This is your host, Daria Ann, and I'm so glad that you're here with me today. We have a wonderful interview coming up with author Renee Gatz, who wrote a book called Wise Words and Witty Expressions, based on the timeless wisdom that had been passed down to her from her Irish grandmother and her mother. And I know you're really going to enjoy that interview, which was actually pre-taped last week. Renee was kind enough to take some time out of her weekend to pre-tape the interview because she's got a very busy schedule and it was impossible for her to join me here during the week. So we're going to get to that in just a moment. But before I do, I also wanted to take this occasion to read a blog post from one of my dearest friends in the blogosphere and on social media. And I refer to him as Brother Bernie. His name is Bernard Luchman, and he is a Christian minister and just a wonderful man, and I'm honored to count him among my friends. And he has an excellent blog called The Right Stuff, and that's W-R-I-T-E, and you can find it at bernieluchman.blogspot.com. That's bernieluchman.blogspot.com. And today, Bernie posted a very interesting article about St. Patrick, which I actually did not know. So I'm going to go ahead and excerpt a little bit from that piece right now on the air. And I encourage you to please check out his blog because Bernie blogs daily and he's very inspiring and he's just a wonderful guy. So you can also follow him on Twitter if you want to keep up with him. It's at Bernie, B-E-R-N-I-E. L-U-T-C-H-M-A-N. And Bernie, I hope you get to check this out in the archives. I tweeted it at you earlier. But anyway, okay, here is a portion of Bernie's blog post called The Real St. Patrick of Ireland. Born in the year 390 AD in England, Patrick was kidnapped by Irish pirates and sold into slavery on the Emerald Isle around the age of 16. He was the son of a deacon, but according to his own writings, he really cared nothing for God. All of this changed once he experienced slavery in Ireland. By the way, this selling into slavery thing sounds a lot like Joseph's brother selling Joseph into slavery from the book of Genesis. And this is a quote from Patrick. I must not, however, hide God's gift, which he bestowed upon me in the land of captivity. The gift so great, so salutary, to know God and to love him. Because then I earnestly sought him, and there I found him. And he saved me from all evil, because so I believe of his spirit that dwells in me. Around the age of 22, Patrick had already decided to follow the Lord, who had sustained him while he was a slave. He escaped slavery and returned a changed man to his family, where he promptly began to study the Bible. Patrick felt the call of God back to his training ground of Ireland, a country rich in paganism, witchcraft, and full of druids. He responded in 435 AD. This call, according to Patrick's own words in his famous letter or declaration, quote, I saw a man coming as if it were from Ireland. His name was Victoricus, and he carried many letters, and as he gave me one of them, I read the heading, The Voice of the Irish. As I began the letter, I imagined in that moment that I heard the voice of those very people who were near the wood of Falkland, which is beside the Western Sea, and they cried out as with one voice, We appeal to you, holy servant boy, to come and walk among us. Unquote. I arise today through the strength of heaven, light of sun, brilliance of moon, splendor of fire, speed of lightning, swiftness of wind, depth of sea, stability of earth, firmness of rock. I arise today through God's strength to pilot me, God's might to uphold me, God's wisdom to guide me, God's eye to look before me, God's ear to hear me, God's word to speak for me, God's hand to guard me, God's way to lie before me, God's host to secure me against snares of devils, against temptation of vices, against inclinations of nature, against everyone who shall wish me ill, afar and anear, alone and in a crowd. And that's from St. Patrick. And Bernie writes, Patrick fought the evil druids and pagans of Ireland for many years through prayer and preaching the truth from the gospel of Christ. He baptized thousands of adults and children, including kings, judges, and men and women of all walks of life. As a real man of God, he refused to take payment from kings for his ministry work. He is also credited for making Ireland a Christian country, lo, these many years ago. Many things are associated with Patrick, including the legend of the snakes, where he is said to have banished all the snakes from Ireland via prayer and a 40-day fast. This has been in doubt. According to National Geographic, there were never any snakes in Ireland except a legless lizard. What they could have been referring to is the serpent of old Satan. The pagan druids had snakes as their symbols to honor their god, the serpent of the Garden of Eden. Those are the quote-unquote snakes Patrick defeated and drove out of business. The most famous symbol of St. Patrick's Day is the shamrock. Legend is Patrick used the extremely beautiful greenery and three-leaf shamrock to teach all of Ireland about the divine trinity of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. The color green is an expression of life, spiritual rebirth, and eternal life. In brief, this is the real story of Patrick of Ireland, the same man of God whom too many, especially here in the United States, uses an outrageous excuse for lewd and public drunkenness in cities across this country. And you can read the rest at Bernie's blog, but I saw that today and I thought it was perfect to read on this occasion where we're celebrating St. Patrick's Day. Okay, and I'm going to get to Renee's interview here in just a few minutes, but before I do, I wanted to remind everybody that the RightStream Radio Network launched this March, just a couple of weeks ago. And besides myself, we have two other hosts, the wonderful author and metaphysician Lisa Tarvis, who hosts a show called Just Believe every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And on Monday, we have our Military Monday show with author and military historian John D. Gresham. Both of these hosts have very informative guests on their program. They have wonderful information to share, and they're doing an awesome job, and I'm just so thrilled that they are part of this network. And you can check out all of the archives just by going to blogtalkradio.com/rightstream. And please follow us on Twitter using hashtag rightstream. Every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern, we host the RightStream Twitter chat, and each week I bring on a different author, and we talk about a variety of things, as we do on these radio programs, a variety of things of interest to readers, including, you know, how the writing process itself, how these authors got started, their advice for aspiring authors, how to navigate through social media, how to decide between e-publishing and traditional publishing, and the pros and cons of both, and just a myriad of things. That are of interest to not just authors and writers, but also to readers. So please be sure to join us every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Twitter using hashtag RightStream, and tune in to the RightStream Radio Network, blogtalkradio.com/RightStream. Okay, and without further ado, I'm going to replay my wonderful interview with the enormously talented author Renee Gatz. And her book, again, is called Wise Words and Witty Expressions. Take a listen.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. And this is Daria Ann with the RightStream Radio Network here on Blog Talk Radio. And I am waiting for my good friend and author of Wise Words and Witty Expressions, Renee Gatz, to join me here in just a moment. So until she does, I thought I would take this opportunity to let everybody know a little bit about her book. We are actually pre-taping this interview for a special RightStream broadcast in celebration of St. Patrick's Day. And you can actually find Renee's book, Wise Words and Witty Expressions, in two places, actually, that come to mind, Amazon.com. And again, just type in Wise Words and Witty Expressions by Renee Gatz. That's R-E-N-E-E. G-A-T-Z, and you will find it. And Renee's book is currently enjoying a 5-star rating on Amazon, which is wonderful. You can also check out Renee's work at her blog, reneegatz.com. That's R-E-N-E-E-G-A-T-Z.com. And she does a phenomenal job with, you know, keeping her site updated and letting everybody know about her various appearances with the book, and she's done a lot of really exciting things since the book was published, and I believe it came out, oh gosh, in 2011, because I actually met Renee, I can't believe it's this long already, time flies, I met her at an event called Books New Jersey, which took place, I believe it was up in Paramus, New Jersey, back in June of 2011. I had already met her, so to speak, through a mutual friend of ours, and we had spoken on the phone and interacted on Facebook and on other social media platforms. So we kind of knew each other, but I had the pleasure of meeting Renee and her mom in person when she was at Books New Jersey in 2011, promoting her book there along with so many wonderful authors. That was really just a great event. So I'm really excited that she was able to join me today. We have to pre-tape this interview because it's difficult for Renee, who works a full-time corporate job. You know, she's in the corporate world as well in marketing. It's difficult for her to be able to do interviews during the week. So, and I see that she's on the line right now. So without further ado, I welcome my good friend and excellent author, Renee Gatz, to the program. Hi, Renee.
Hello. Hi, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, gosh, you're welcome. You know, it's so good to hear your voice. It seems like it's been such a long time since we've spoken, and I'm thrilled that we were able to work this out and be able to pre-tape this interview for St. Patty's Day celebration for RightStream. So thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for pre-recording me. Somehow we couldn't manage it live, but at least we're getting it pre-recorded, so this is great.
Absolutely. So, Renee, I'm going to start from the beginning, though. Let's talk a little bit about you first and, mm-hmm. you know, your aspirations. When you were younger, did you always want to write a book? Like, tell us a little bit about what you were like growing up and what your plans were for your future.
It's when I was a very, very little girl, I was going to be a checkout girl at Krauser's because I really was fascinated by the cash register machine, and I just thought that was the coolest thing in the world. And my mother kind of laughed, and she said, we're going to spend a lot of money sending her to school so she can work the cash register at Krauser's. And then I went through a phase where I wanted to be a school teacher. And then while I was in school, I went to school at night. I worked full-time, and I earned my undergraduate degree while I was working. And I initially thought that I was going to go into law and be a paralegal. And then, you know, as life teaches you along the way, things happen and you change your mind. And I actually had a professor, I will never forget, Professor Caputo, and he asked everybody in the room, who here wants to be a paralegal, which was my end goal. And a good number of people in the class raised their hands and said that they did, among my, including myself. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, if what you want to do is be a paralegal, then you should just finish all of your education and become a lawyer and go to law school, because you're going to wind up doing all the grunt work for the lawyer, your salary is going to cap out, and it's just going to be, you know, a dead-end type of a career for you. And I stopped, and that really impacted me. I thought, wow, I'm working full-time, I'm paying to go to school in the evening, this is a real commitment, is this what I want for my end goal? And I also knew I really didn't want to go to law school in the evening as well. So I actually changed course and went to business school, took business courses rather, and graduated from St. Peter's College in Jersey City with a BS in business management and a minor in marketing. And at the time I was attending school in the evening, I was working for a financial services organization, and that's how I got into that industry. I was working on the marketing team there, and as you know, fate would have it, marketing and I really clicked, and I just pursued my career ever since then in marketing once I graduated. Now, as far as becoming a writer, and is that something that was always an aspiration of mine, or becoming an author? No. As a matter of fact, if someone came up to me and told me 5 years ago that I was going to write a book, I would have thought they were crazy. I mean, it was just never something that occurred to me. But as I was growing up, my mother had all of these fabulous expressions that as a child I rolled my eyes at her and I just, you know, kind of said, oh, there she goes again with these expressions, because I had heard the same ones over and over. And then I got a little older, and as a teenager, you know, I was babysitting, and I heard my mother's voice coming out of my mouth, and I was horrified. I said, oh, my gosh, I sound like my mother. What 15-year-old girl ever wants to sound like their mother? That your mother, is at that point in your life, is the devil incarnate. You can't be anything like her. But then, you know, you get a little bit older, and you really appreciate what you had been taught as you were growing up. And in spite of myself, all of those expressions would come back to me to help me navigate life's ups and downs. Now, myself, I am the product of parents that had me later in life. Now, I know today it's, like, really cool. Everybody's parents are, like, much older now. But when I was a kid, it was really cool to have very young parents. And the way that I was raised was very, very different from all my peers. And my parents, primarily my mother, had incorporated all of these expressions into my growing up years. And I, you know, really just took them for granted. And then when I would be out among my peers or coworkers as I got a bit older, I would drop these, you know, unconsciously into conversation, and people would be stopping me and saying, oh my gosh, that is so helpful. Or, you know, if there was a lot of drama in the room and I made a comment, it's sort of like was the equalizer and, you know, kind of put everybody back in check. And it was just really like an observation that I was making as I went along, and people would say, oh, you know, you should write a book, you should really put these down somewhere, they're really helpful. And then at some point in my career, so life is a very interesting, it's life unravels, I think. So all of these years of marketing and writing in business and thinking about, you know, how to promote different products in one industry, it was very usable skills that I had transferred over into the writing when I went ahead to publish my book. And then the spirit moved me, and I just sat down and started developing the manuscript. And now, having worked an entire career in financial services, I had known no one in publishing, knew nothing about publishing. But, you know, I did have networks, and I just started reaching out to them, and little by little, everything just started falling into place for me, and the book came to be.
Wow, that's a wonderful story, Renee. And I have to, first of all, I want to just congratulate you for your discipline in, you know, working full-time and going to school at night. I just think that's incredible, and you really should be commended for that. I mean, that is not easy, so just pick that out. So my hat is off to you for that. And, you know, and also the second thing I want to commend you for is that it sounds like at a very young age you really sort of understood the wisdom of your mother and I think of your grandmother as well.
Of course, yes. I'm glad you mentioned her because, you know, this whole thing is about St. Patrick's Day and the Irish and this and that. So, you know, my grandmother is a very big part of the story. But, you know, here's what's really, really interesting. My grandmother died when I was 3 years old. So I have these very intermittent memories of her. However, my mother has really kept her spirit alive for me throughout my life, and I really feel, and the Irish, they tend to be very humble, and my mother, I would say, oh, Mom, you know, you really taught me a lot, and she just kind of shakes her head and looks at me like I'm crazy, and she says, Renee, these aren't my expressions, they're my mother's expressions that I just shared with you. And she just doesn't see that for me it was my mother, but it's just like a generational thing, right? We you know, my grandmother certainly didn't invent these. I'm sure that she learned them from, you know, the family that came before her. And I just, you know, talk about, you know, inspiration, and that's what I really consider my book is inspirational. I hope it's inspirational. I hope people read it and get ideas from my book and think, wow, you know, that's a really good thing to keep in mind. And, you know, it's very optimistic and very forward and positive thinking, but my grandmother is a very interesting woman in her own right. She came to this country on June 1st, she landed in Ellis Island, which just so happens to be my birthday as well. So there was a little bit of history that kind of got unwoven as I, yeah. I said to my mother, why didn't you ever tell me that? She said, it never even occurred to me. So I said, Mom, I think that's fascinating because I've always had this reverence for her, even though I hadn't really spent a good time of my life getting to know her. But she had come over to the U.S., from Ireland in 1907, I think it's 1907, don't hold me to it though, but early 1900s, and she was 18 years old and she came over alone, and she wasn't the one that was meant to come from her family, her sister was meant to come, and she chickened out at the last minute, but the family had already bought the ticket. So on 24 hours notice, can you imagine being 18 years old and then packing up your whole life and getting on a ship? And she wasn't going, you know, on some beautiful cruise ship to come from Ireland to the U.S. She was traveling steerage, which was not a pleasant experience, as many people know from, you know, studying the European immigration, and landed here in Ellis Island. I just think that in of itself is fascinating. I think about where my head was at 18, and I just can't even imagine being able to do that. And she did do it. And so here's a little funny story. So what would a nice Irish girl bring for her sponsor? Because at the time the Europeans came over, they had to have sponsors when they landed in the U.S., and they had to have jobs and promise of employment. What do you think you would give your sponsor if you came over here from Ireland? A bottle of Jameson. What else would you give? So she brought this bottle of Jameson over as a thank you, except that while they were on the ship, because they were in steerage, and we know today that everyone, there was a lot of sickness, well, she cracked open the bottle of Jameson and passed it around to help the people who were ill on the ship, and then by the time she landed here in the U.S., that bottle had been finished. So there was no gift to give the sponsor.
Oh, my God, that's funny.
But when she, then when she got, sorry, go ahead, yeah.
I just wanted to say it shows what a generous soul she was, though, that she was more concerned about helping other people in the moment. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I really, like, I write in the beginning of my book, my dedication, I dedicate to my mother and father and the way that they raised me and that they talk the talk and walk the walk all at the same time. And, you know, that goes back. And I really feel blessed to have been, you know, raised by people who had strong conviction and values and who we can now point to and say, well, look, that really paid off because, you know, my grandmother was an immigrant and now her daughter is, you know, I think I've achieved a certain amount of success in my life that unfortunately wasn't available to her at the time, but I was able to have, and I wouldn't have it had I not had the benefit of everything that had come before me and all of the lessons of the family that, you know, I was fortunate enough to be a part of. So I'm eternally grateful, you know, to be a part of that family and to have learned from them. And I credit myself with being smart enough to pay attention and listen.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Now, Renee, when you sat down to write the book,
yeah,
did you group these expressions into like categories for different aspects of life? Like, tell us a little bit about how that process works.
Yeah, sure. So that's a really great question. So what I initially started to do is I just kind of sat down and I just dropped into a computer every single thing I could remember just off the top of my head. And then you kind of get to a point where you can't think of anymore. But then what would happen is if I was watching a movie and I would see a scenario play out, I would remember one and I would jot it down. I got a lot of recollection from being in work and watching meetings go on and a lot of interaction from the office. And I don't know, people must have thought I was crazy because all of a sudden I would like grab a little scrap of paper and jot an expression down and I'd stuff it in my wallet and then I'd go home and I'd add it to my collection. And I also got it in the morning when I was walking my dog, like, you know, your mind is a little more open and you would think of one, and then I would repeat it to myself endlessly till I got home so I wouldn't forget it and then write it down. And what I noticed after I got all of these expressions together was I said, how am I going to make this meaningful for people, you know, so that it makes some sort of sense. It's not just, you know, all over the map. And what I noticed was that there was ability to group these expressions into themes and ideas, and those became the chapters. So, for example, there's a whole chapter dedicated to the things that mothers say to their children, which, you know, I think everyone will be able to relate to what they see in there. They've probably heard it 100 times from their own families. I've noticed that there were the expressions that my mother had said that, you know, were trying to call out my behavior. So I called that, it's all about you, you know, for the expressions to remind you that maybe you're not really, you know, you're maybe part of the problem or maybe you need to think about it in a different way. There's one in there for life's little challenges. The wisdom in life experience. Some wisdom isn't really understood until you've experienced some of life and it becomes meaningful. For example, one of the expressions in my book is, you can't put an old head on young shoulders. You know, sometimes you just need to, people need time to experience life to really appreciate what someone may be saying to them. So, yeah, that's sort of how the book became developed.
Well, that's great. Do you have a section on dating?
Actually, not on dating exactly, but I probably could write a whole book about that. I actually have one in here called The Joys and Pains of Love. So that it's not exactly dating, and it's not all about romantic love either. It's all kinds of love.
Sure. Well, you know, it's funny. I was having this conversation with Bill Chandler from Andante Publishing, who I interviewed earlier this week, and we were talking about people. We were just talking about relationships in general. And sometimes we have people in our lives who, I call them psychic vampires. They see you going after your dream, especially something like this, you know, writing a book, you know, being a writer and wanting to pursue that. And fortunately, I've been blessed that most people in my life are 100% supportive. But you always have those people, and maybe for one reason or another, you can't cut them out of your life, so you have to learn how to deal with them, even though they're kind of like, well, why are you doing that? You know, like, you'll never make it. And Bill and I kind of suggested to Bill, and I want to get your take on this, is sometimes I think people do that not so much out of malice. It's just that they don't have the courage maybe to pursue their own dreams. So it kind of hurts them to see somebody else going after theirs. And I just wanted to get your take on that, Renee.
I tend to agree with you on that point. And my mother would have, you know, a great expression for you. You can do anything you put your mind to. I can't tell you how many times I heard that over and over again. And that just really reinforced for me that I can, that, you know, and but here's the part about it that, you know, she also put the disclaimer on, it's not going to be easy, right? Because anything in life worth having is worth working hard for. I mean, we're all going to have our failures. Every single human being has their failures. But it's the ones that are willing to shake it off pretty quickly and move forward instead of getting stuck in it, I think that really get the opportunity to see their dreams come to pass and sometimes get things out of it that they never could have anticipated on the journey, which I can tell you for sure has happened to me. But I do agree with you. But I think the thing that I'm grateful for is that I grew up in a family that wouldn't allow me to get stuck there. I mean, like if I came home and somebody said that to me, my mother would immediately tell me, you can do anything you put your mind to. And then, or she would say, are they paying your bills? Are they taking care of you? Are they putting food on your table? Then what do you care what they think?
That
so
like
I really had
too.
That built-in, you know, support system and education to sort of help me from a very young age to turn that noise off. And unfortunately, I don't think a lot of people have that. And that's what I think happens to those, you know, would you call those vampire people?
Yeah, those energy vampires. Yes,
energy vampires, yeah.
I'm fortunate myself to have the same kind of mother and the same kind of parents who would do that. And it's funny, Renee, we also have something in common, too. My mom was, like by today's standards, she wouldn't be considered old, but when she had me, and I'm the youngest of five, and I was unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
She was 36, which was at the time was considered old. Now people are just starting to have babies at that age, so it's kind
right.
of funny. We have a lot of things in common in that regard.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting. So tell us a little bit about, now let's talk a little bit about the marketing, because you alluded to this earlier, and it is such a great point, and I talked about this with Bill the other day, too, is that I think a lot of times writers who maybe don't have the marketing background
mm-hmm.
that you do don't understand that it's not just about creating something wonderful. And I can attest, I love your book, and I encourage everyone to go to your blog, ReneeGatz.com, and purchase it. But it's not just about writing a wonderful book. You know, without that marketing sort of business component, you know, I think that movie was wrong. You know, if you build it, they will come. I think that's kind of, I don't think that's true. I think you can build something great, but then you've got to get out there and tell the whole world about it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I could agree with you more there as well. I mean, I have seen tremendously talented people who just don't know how to market. And I've noticed, and this isn't true of me, I mean, obviously you can tell I can talk, a lot of writers are introverted, and they spend a lot of time alone while they're writing, and they come up with these fabulous works, but it's not their natural inclination to need to get out in front of people and talk to them. But I've, you know, in all of my work with my book, I've also done plenty of talks about, you know, how do you become published. And what I've said right from the jump before I go too far into my conversation is writing the book and getting it produced is a wonderful experience, and it's definitely something that you should be proud of. But unfortunately, it's only 25% of your effort. 75% of your effort is going to go into the marketing of that book, and it never stops. Like, eventually you write the book, it's done, it's on the shelf, done, checkbox done. But you never, ever stop marketing your book. You never stop getting in front of people and talking about it. You never stop looking for opportunities or avenues to make your book available or known to people. So it's a huge aspect of it, and I do feel that if you don't have the funds to find to pay for someone to provide PR for you, that can be a real burden. But even if you do, you're the author of the book. It's your work. People want to meet you. They want to talk to you. They want to understand your story, and no one can deliver your story better than you can. And that's really, I think, you know, something clearly I've learned from marketing. I mean, if we were going to be marketing a fund, we would absolutely want the fund manager to get up there and talk about it, because that particular fund manager could talk to a fund better than anyone else in the room could. We could have all the data and all the stats, but that person has the passion that cannot come out from a second party. So I think that in that respect, yes, I've been very fortunate, because I've actually worked in that machine and had to figure it out. And the thing that was really great was that it was so nice to know that all of those skills that I had learned, you know, the financial services industry is one kind of an industry, and publishing and writing is a very different kind of an industry, and it's been going through a lot of evolution and change, as we all know, over the past several years. So, you know, I had to get on that learning curve, but the transfer of the basic fundamental marketing skills, they slid over pretty easily.
Yeah, and Renee, you are such a wonderful speaker, and it's true. I think that people, your readers, your audience, they're just as interested as you, in you, the author, as they are in the book. And that's the thing about writing, is that you as the author are so close to the material that it's natural that people are as interested in you, the person, and what motivated you to write your book and those sorts of things. So tell us a little bit, though, Renee, let me just back up for a second. Did you self-publish or did you go through traditional publishing? And also, did you hire a PR agent or how did you go about marketing your book, I guess?
Sure. So I am a moonlighting author, first of all. I have a full-time career. I work in New York City, so I have, you know, my time is very, very limited. But I didn't, like I had mentioned earlier, had no knowledge of this industry. And when I went out to my network, which I belong to an organization called the Association for Women in Communications. It's a national organization, but I have a New Jersey chapter that I went to. And I went out to them. I said, well, you know, maybe they can help me. Maybe they know someone who can point me in the right direction. Unfortunately, no one in New Jersey did. But because it's a national organization, I could put a question out and see if anybody nationally would respond. Well, can I just tell you that I received over 200 emails from women all over this country who were providing me with the benefit of their experience, both going through an agent, well, I should say three ways, going through an agent, going through a publisher, or publishing independently. And based on all the information I was able to gather from them, I made the personal decision to become an independently published author, meaning I went and I paid for the use of a publishing service, and I do all the legwork. I do all of the marketing, all of the PR. I'm on the phone trying to set up engagements for me to speak at or book signings for me to host. I manage my own blog. I manage my own Facebook page, my own Twitter account. I write a monthly newsletter. It's an inspirational newsletter that weaves in the expressions from my book so that that I get a lot of positive and wonderful feedback from. So it's been a total project that I've managed pretty much soup to nuts. I've sort of, if you will, contracted out to another publisher to help me get the book published in the appropriate format, to help me get in front of the right designers, to get the cover work done, to get the right printer, to print out a quality product, to help me price the book. So it's really me using contractors. I think that's the best way to do the analogy. I will say there's only one other person on my team, and that is my mother. And I tell her every year, aww, Mom, you did such a fabulous job. I'm going to give you 100% increase. 100% of zero, it's still zero. So she does it out of a labor of love, but I take her out to dinner a lot, and we've had a lot of fun. She's fabulous with me when she comes out on, you know, to the events. And people love meeting her just as much as they enjoy hearing from me. So that is, you know, sort of the direction that I've taken with my book.
That is so neat. And yes, your mother is such a lovely lady. I had the pleasure of meeting her and you at Books New Jersey in 2011. So that was really a lot of fun. So, Renee, like, tell us a little bit about the different types of events that you do. And I know you have a really good story about some pretty well-known authors, so I definitely want you to share that with the audience.
Yeah, sure. So, well, you mentioned well-known authors. Mary Higgins Clark is one of them. And one of the avenues that I used to market my book was called HARA, which is an acronym for Help a Reporter Out, and it is a database where people who are looking to get content about various topics put in queries, and people who want to be seen in the media can answer those queries and hopefully be picked up. And one of the queries that I had seen was a request for women of Irish descent. There were two women out of Texas that were writing a book called Wise Irish Women, and they wanted to collect stories about women of Irish descent and how they've, you know, counted on their heritage to help see them through challenges and, you know, what it means to be Irish, et cetera. And that really resonated with me, and I thought, well, and I didn't consider myself a wise Irish woman per se, but I did certainly think my mother and grandmother would be those people, and I wanted to be able to share that story with others. And long story short, I was the first chapter that the the two authors were able to write, and they went on to collect some amazing stories, and I would highly recommend reading that book as well. You can learn about that on wiseirishwomen.com. They and one of those authors was Mary Higgins Clark, and she has just the most incredible rags-to-riches story. And the thing that really resonates with me is that she's just this incredibly kind, gracious, highly talented woman. And I did have the opportunity to hear her speak at the Irish American Fund in New York, where they were promoting the book. And she is just as incredible a public speaker as she is a writer. The woman is in her 80s now, and she's just a phenomenon. And it was really humbling to be in her company in this book. And, you know, we kind of talked about, well, did I ever think I was going to be doing this? Well, just think, in a very short period of time, I wrote a book, and then I was in somebody else's book. And it's just been an incredible journey from that perspective.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, and congratulations. And we had Mary Higgins Clark had been at that event, or she was honored at that Books New Jersey event. And you're right. I mean, she is a wonderful, wonderful speaker and just a really gracious lady. I really enjoyed meeting her.
Yeah, yeah. She is a great inspiration. And she really took a lot of time to, during that event, she sat down and she there was all authors there, and they all, of course, wanted to meet her. And she took time with each individual one to talk to them and to encourage them and to give them, to believe in themselves and what they wanted to do. And I just really, you don't see a lot of that today, and I really think we need to applaud it when we do. And she's just, I consider her an incredibly wonderful lady.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do, too. Renee, so let's talk a little bit more about getting back to the publishing aspect. What was the process by which you decided, okay, I'm going to go with this company versus this company? Anyone out there that's thinking of self-publishing, I think that would be helpful information.
Sure. So that is a great question, because there is, back in the day, being a self-published author was very, very frowned upon, and you really didn't get any credibility whatsoever. And that really has changed now with social media, and I really credit it mostly to that, because people can get incredible pickup and acknowledgement because of it. It used to be the only way that you could tap in those audiences were through a publishing company, and that really, that landscape has certainly changed. But when things like this start to sprout up, there's a lot of different people out there that may not be providing you with all of the best services. So it's really a buyer beware type of a thing out there. You really want to make sure that you do all your due diligence and know what you're getting into. And I think that, when you're so passionate about writing a book and it's such a dream for you, sometimes you can get a little bit clouded and you have to take a step back. And remember, this is a business like any other business. I mean, I think that's really kind of critical. I mean, writers are passionate people, so you make sure you want that. You don't want to squash that passion, but it is a business, and you really need to, sort of take care to make sure you understand what it is that you're engaging in and who you're engaging in with it. And it would be my recommendation to talk to people who have used different services or different people to see what their experiences have been in before they, write a check or, engage in that contract. But as luck would have it for me, luck of the Irish, I guess, the publishing company that I use is Woodpecker Press. And after I went to that first meeting at the Association for Women in Communications, and there was no one at that meeting that had any publishing experience, I came to find out that there were two women that were in my New Jersey chapter that were starting up their own publishing company. And I felt very safe. And they were right here in New Jersey. A lot of times when you work with another publishing house, you do everything through email. You never even have an in-person visit with the person, whomever it is that's helping you with your work. And this, to me, was fabulous, because I'm a very collaborative person. I like to work in strong relationships. And to be able to sit at the table and, talk things through, actually meet the designer who did the cover work for my book, and collaborate on, well, what does that cover look like and what should it be, to work with women that I knew would have my very best interest at heart. It really took a load off my mind, and then it allowed me to really engage in the creative process, which was just fabulous, because I work in the corporate space. somebody tells me every day what font I should be using, what colors I should be using, how many words I should be writing. And here I had this opportunity to do all of this, make all the decisions about my book, and it was just a fabulous experience.
Yeah, it is very, very liberating.
Yeah.
That's true. And, you know, you mentioned social media, Renee, and I agree with you 100%. I think it's really helped to sort of democratize the mm-hmm. whole publishing process. And I do believe, too, that the stigma has sort of fallen away from being self-published. I mean, I don't know, and I want you to speak to this as well and get your opinion. But, you know, for me, back in 2008 when I self-published my book, I found that traditional publishing houses, if you weren't a known quantity like mm-hmm. a celebrity – that they mm-hmm. saw immediate dollar signs and immediate return on their investment, they didn't care. They weren't really so much seeking out new talent and looking to promote the next great author. For them, it was all about sort of the instant gratification of knowing a book was going to sell just because it had a famous name attached to it.
Agree. Yeah, absolutely. I think it does speak to what's going on in social media, right? Because there was a time when you would be willing to nurture new talent, when you would see something in someone and you'd be willing to bring that along. But now it's very much about the balance sheet. How bankable is this author? And that's really it. I mean, and you know, I'm sure we all can point to very famous people who've written works that weren't so fabulous once we read them, but they still made fabulous sales because of the name recognition. I couldn't agree with you more around that. And the other side of that, too, is finding an agent. You know, finding an agent is a whole nother process that could take years and years and years to do. And then, you know, you have to share your revenues with the publisher, with the agent. The margins on books are very, very slim. So it's definitely not something that, you know, I would recommend people going into because they think they can make a lot of money doing it. It's definitely something you do as a passion, and you hope that along the way that it just sort of takes off and grows beyond where it began.
Yeah, no, exactly. That is so true. And for me, like, you know, it was funny. I was in the middle of editing a client's book, which was about a 2-year process, and I saw her jumping through all kinds of hoops to try to get the attention of a literary agent. And I mean, and her book was in the health and wellness genre, and it was very well written, and, you know, it was partly sort of biography and partly, you know, advice, and it had a theme. It was actually called You Deserve the Royal Treatment, so it had a real nice theme running through it about self-care, mm-hmm. and it was a wonderful book, but I mean, every time I met with her, she'd tell me how frustrated she was because they were requiring her now to go out to a bookstore and do all this research and find books that were like hers. And, you know, anyway, my point to this rambling story is that after 2 years of working with her, somewhere in the middle of all that, I finished my book, and I thought, you know what, forget it. I'm not putting myself through this. And
exactly.
As you said, like, you know, it's such a small profit margin anyway. The traditional publisher takes most of the money, and you're still doing just as much work as you would have
That's
done
right.
on your own anyway.
I couldn't agree with you more. And you only – and from the truth of the matter is once you – I've actually met with people that are finally became published and a publisher picked them up, fabulously talented people, but they're only on that sell sheet for 3 months. And then they drop off and somebody else comes on. So the level of attention that you get from the publisher, I agree with you. That's a part of the reason that I made the choice that I did was that, you know what, I can market this. I kind of felt like I can market this, and if I have to do all the work, I may as well get paid for it.
Exactly.
So, you know, that was definitely something that was a motivating factor for me. And interestingly enough, I joined a writing group not too long ago because I really would like to write a children's version of my book. I've had a lot of requests from people who've bought my book and said that I would really love to see this as a children's book. And I have, you know, a bit of an outline in mind, but I work in a very demanding industry right now, and my time is very limited, and needless to say, it's really hard for me to get into a child's mindset after kind of spending a whole day in the corporate space. But I'm going to work on getting that brought along more and more. But it's just what I was hearing in this writing group was I didn't write it for children, and that is yet a whole other learning curve, learning how to promote a book in that marketplace because it's very different than the marketplace I'm currently sitting in. And what I was hearing was that the publishers were really driving what would be on the shelves. They don't want any talking animals. They don't want any moral stories. And I just thought to myself, since when are talking animals and moral stories not good good material for children. But it seems that they kind of make a decision, the grand they, about what will be on the shelves or what is in demand right now. And then they go out and they seek the writers that can fit with that particular desired need at the moment. And I just kind of took the position on that with, well, you know what? I spent all day long being told what I should and shouldn't do. Whether I agree with it or not is irrelevant. It's not, you know, my company. I need to follow the protocols that I, you know, of my employer. Why would I want to spend all my time trying to chase down publishers or literary agents that want me to fit into a box? It's almost counterintuitive when you think about the creative process. Generally, people that are in a creative process are not trying to fit in a box, but here you have publishers and literary agents looking for specific things. So, you know, I kind of said, you know what, for me, this is a passion, this is something I want to do. I'm going to go out and promote it and see where it goes.
Wow, that is such an excellent point, Renee. I couldn't agree more. And I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, I think what we need is a little bit more morality in the society we're living in, and maybe, you know, teach these kids while they're young, the principles that you and I were raised with. So, but yeah, your point is very well taken. And you're right. I mean, if you're a creator, you're an author, you don't want to be placed inside a box. And it seems like, too, and I'll want to get your opinion on this, too, like with the publishing industry, you go to these trends like vampires. We mentioned vampires earlier, but vampires in the traditional sense were kind of like the in thing there for a while, and they wanted authors to write about vampires. Well, what if that's not your thing, and you really want to write about, as in your case, you know, these wise expressions that actually have practical value in people's lives?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is a market for everything. I just think that when you want the biggest microphone, they're kind of calling those shots. And what I've learned is that when you're a little guy, being niche is to your advantage. So you need to, because for example, for me, my expressions are based on my Irish heritage. When I get in front of an Irish audience, I resonate with them like nobody's business. They get me, I get them. It's a great, great experience. I have to work a lot harder in a broader audience for my story to resonate. It still does, but it's not like we're talking apples to apples. I have to get you, there's a baseline understanding in the Irish community about where I'm coming from. I have an educational hurdle to hit walking into a different audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, though, that, you know, please, for everyone who's not Irish out there, what I have heard, and this is not me, this is what I've heard in feedback when I've gone out into these broader audiences, is these expressions are for everyone, every age, every culture, every background, because ultimately, while they were part of my Irish upbringing, they are for the human experience, and we all are having a human experience every day here. And what we experience in an Irish community is no different than an Indian community, African-American community, a Spanish community, a Jewish community. And I can point to specific examples of people who walked up to me when I was in a broader audience and had said to me, you know, when I was a little girl, a Spanish woman had come up to me and said, my mother had said those same expressions to me, only she said them to me in Spanish. And another Jewish woman that was in my audience had walked up to me and said an expression to me in Yiddish, and I asked her for the translation, and she had said to me, man plans and God laughs. My mother had said those very same words to me growing up. So this is, you know, across the board, wisdom that can be used. But my point about being niche is that it's easier for me to speak to people who are of like experience, but I have to take a different approach when I market to a broader audience, right? So it's all about knowing your audience whenever you talk to people, making sure that your message is tailored to whom you're standing in front of.
Understood. Yeah, that is excellent advice. And kind of along those same lines, Renee, because, again, this came up in my interview with Bill the other day, and I thought it was a great point, is the idea of sort of blooming where you're planted geographically, so not just speaking to your niche market and then your broader market, but also your geographic location, because mm-hmm. I found that people get real excited about the prospect of a quote-unquote local author. What do you think about that?
I think they do, too. It's stunning to me. I mean, I'm just this little girl from New Jersey, and sometimes the expression I get is, oh, my goodness, I met an author. And I'm like, It's stunning to me. I mean, people get excited about that, and you know, part of being Irish is that no one will let you get a big head. If you're in a house and you start acting up and thinking you're all of this and that, there will be about three or four people be very happy to straighten you right out. So I am, you know, I just sit there in kind of shock and awe and go, oh my goodness, you think that's a really big deal? Wow, thank you so much. They make me feel so great and make me, it's, I can't even begin to tell you how cool that is.
Yeah, I know it is. It's a great feeling. But Renee, you know, since we are celebrating St. Patrick's Day with this interview, in the last like 15 minutes or so, let's talk a little bit about like what some of your favorite Irish traditions are, and a little bit maybe about the Irish culture. What would you like to share with the audience about that?
My favorite Irish, goodness gracious,
it could be events, you know, holidays, whatever. Just you know, share some of your.
Well, I actually love my mother's Irish soda bread. Not such a great fan of corned beef and cabbage. Sorry, Mom. But I think the thing that I like about the Irish is that they also are so willing to incorporate other people's cultures and enjoy them. So, you know, everybody's Irish on St. Patrick's Day. We want everybody to join in our party. You know, we're really proud of being Irish, but we want everybody to have a good time with us. So, it's one of the things I treasure about my Irish background. I've always been so open and so happy to participate in. I've had a lot of Italian friends growing up and eating all those fabulous Sunday meals. And, you know, my father was Polish, and my mother really worked very hard at making sure we incorporated Polish culture and Polish meals into our, you know, our holidays and our experiences. So I think that and the spirit of the Irish is something that I really am so grateful for. You know, I just recently last week did an event where I was talking about the power of Irish wisdom, and I really talked about when you really look at Irish history and you look at what the Irish have endured for centuries, we're not talking about a group of people who had a bad year, 10 years, a bad generation. We're talking about people that have endured centuries of persecution. And it would be so easy for them to be negative or to be bitter. And I just came back from Ireland. I was there just this past August. And these are the happiest, genuinely happy people that I have ever met, because from what I can see, there is something inside of them that you can't hold them down, you can't hold them back, you can't stop them from finding the good in things, you can't stop them from finding the joy in things. They're very funny. I mean, so it to me, I think that's such a tribute to that culture, to the people of Ireland, that they could endure all that they've endured, win their independence, and are starting to find their way, and still be these incredibly, I think also another great word to describe them is gracious, grateful people. I am in awe of that. I think that that's just an incredible, I don't know what the correct word is, but an incredible gift to be able to pass on from generation to generation.
Absolutely. Renee, what were some of your favorite places in Ireland? Anything in particular that stood out to you?
Well, I will share this very, very special experience I had. My grandmother was from County Mayo, and the reason that I picked this last trip to Ireland was because it was going to be in County Mayo, and she also went to the Knock Shrine. That was the church she attended as a little girl, and it's also a place of pilgrimage for the Irish or Catholics in general, and the Blessed Mother has said to have made an appearance there. Well, I just thought it was so super cool that I was going to be able to go to the same church that my grandmother had attended over 100 years ago. And I had gone into the church, and I had kneeled down in the back. And, you know, in the back of the church, there was just like a kneeler, not a place where you could sit. And I said, I'll just say a prayer, and then I'll head out. And then I thought, you know, I've come all this way. I think I'd like to just sit here a little bit longer. So I got up and I walked over to this pew, and I sat down in the pew, and I had my head down, and I just happened to turn my head, and there was this beautiful stained glass window, and just in my eye's view, I could see the name Della, and that was my grandmother's name. And
oh my gosh,
I just thought that
chill.
Was such a wonderful experience. It was as if she was saying that she knew I was there. And you know what's really interesting is Della is really not an Irish name. My grandmother's given name is Bridget, which is an Irish name. But when she came to the United States, she was a live-in maid and cook, and there were two Bridgets, and the woman of the house named my grandmother Della to distinguish between them, and that just stuck with her whole life. So for that to happen, I just thought that was an incredible experience. So that was pretty special to me when I had been there, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So what do you have upcoming, Renee, in terms of the book and different events that maybe anybody who might be local could come and meet you in person?
Sure. I will be at Wegmans Food Store in Woodbridge, New Jersey tomorrow from noon to 2 signing my book. I will also be at the Metuchen, New Jersey bookstore on Main Street in Metuchen on the 16th. It's the Saturday before St. Patrick's Day at 2 o'clock, and I'll be speaking about the power of Irish wisdom. And for anybody who really needs a break and wants to get away, I will be spending a week at the Deerfield Spa in Pennsylvania in a week in August. You can check I think it's the 18th, but you can check out my blog site, reneegatz.com, and you'll see one of the links is 2013 events, and I'll be speaking there for about an hour from Monday to Friday during that week.
Fantastic. You've got a lot of great stuff coming out.
Yeah, it's exciting.
That really is. And Renee, any other, you know, anything that you would like to discuss in the last couple of minutes here that maybe we didn't get to about writing or publishing? And also let people know where they can find you again on social media, too.
Sure. Well, I'll start with the easy one first, where to find me on social media. Actually, if you'd like, you can sign up for my newsletter. It's free. It comes out on a monthly basis, generally the first few days of the month. And I will, obviously this month I talked about St. Patrick's Day and the Irish and their spirit. In February, I talked about love and what it means to love and be loved. And it's very lighthearted. It's a fun read, and I weave in expressions from my book, which make the story, you know, very, very interesting. It's maybe like 600 words, so it's a quick read. You can sign up for my newsletter on my blog site, Renee Gatz, reneegatz.com. My book is also available on my website. It's also available on Amazon. And I also have a Facebook account by my name, Renee Gatz. And those would be the primary outlets. I would love to be saying that I'm out there doing a lot more social media, but it is a big time eat, and my career doesn't allow me to spend that much time doing as much social media as I'd like. So that would be great. As far as anything else I'd like to tell you, I would just really like to encourage people to follow their passion, follow their heart, and believe in themselves. It won't happen overnight. Maybe it will happen overnight. But I think as long as you're doing something that gives you joy and pleasure, there are things that are going to come out of that that you could never have anticipated. I know for myself, when I wrote my book and I went out to start meeting people and talking to them, I can't even begin to tell you how encouraging and they kind of just keep me going, the people I meet are, and the things that they tell me, and how much I remind them of an aunt or a mother or a grandmother that passed. I know I was at one book event, and it was around the time that someone had lost their mom, you know, the anniversary of their death. And she said, you know, every time this happens, I always have these little reminders of my mother. And she came to my book signing, and I was saying some expressions that were from her mother. So she said, Renee, that's like that had come to me, you know, as a reminder of her being there. I mean, you know, I just don't even know how to put into words how that makes a person feel and how encouraging that is. You know, when I've pushed out my newsletter and I've, you know, written on inspirational topics, I've gotten responses back that said, you know, this is exactly what I needed to hear right now, that I'm going through this really challenging time, and this was so very helpful to me. Thank you. I just don't even, you know, have words to tell you how wonderful that makes me feel and how encouraging it is for me to continue to keep doing what I'm doing. So those are things that I never even contemplated you know, at the time that I was writing my book and getting ready to push it out, I mean, you know, you're so focused on all of the business sides of things, writing the book, getting the publisher, getting it out, putting it in distribution channels, figuring out how to ship, and all these things that you have to worry about. And then once all that's sort of done and taken care of, and then you just go on this amazing journey, and you just get to meet all these amazing people. And for me, it's writing. For someone else, it may be woodworking, or it may be working with children or elderly or ill, or whatever your passion is, acting, singing, dancing, whatever makes you happy, you should do it. And just ignore the people that, you know, and you really do. You just need to tune them out, turn it off, and just kind of go forward and do it, because what you'll get back from it, you just can't even imagine.
Wow. Well, that is such excellent advice. And what a great place, what a great way to end the interview, Renee. That was just wonderful. I want to thank you so much for joining me today, and I want to wish you a very happy St. Patrick's Day, as well as everyone listening. And, Renee, I'll look forward to chatting with you again really soon.
Oh, thanks a lot, Daria. I really appreciate you having me, and it was as much fun for me as it was for you. And I wish everybody a happy St. Patrick's Day, because everybody's Irish on St. Patrick's Day.
All right. You take care. And
thanks
again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was the wonderful Renee Gatz. I really enjoyed that interview, and I hope you all did as well. And once again, have a happy St. Patrick's Day, and we will see you again real soon for an upcoming broadcast on the Rightstream Radio Network. And actually, to that end, let me go ahead and let you guys know what we have on tap here.
Hi, this is Daria Ann, author and founder of the Rightstream Radio Network. If you're an author, writer, blogger, or just someone who enjoys reading and learning, I hope you'll tune in to our inspiring, insightful, and educational programs. Every Sunday, join author and metaphysician Lisa Tarvez for Just Believe at 1 p.m. Eastern, when she explores a variety of spiritual topics, including alternative healing modalities. A gifted intuitive from a young age, Lisa's book, entitled Just Believe, chronicles her journey from a childhood of seeing and communicating with angels to a career in which she uses her talents to help others emotionally, spiritually, and physically. Each week, she interviews experts in the fields of personal growth, spiritual development, and alternative medicine. Military Mondays with author and military historian John D. Gresham analyzes current events and issues from the perspective of the United States military. Tune in at 1 p.m. Eastern every Monday when John, author of such books as Uncommon Valor and journalist for the Defense Media Network, interviews accomplished guests on important topics like national security and defense and global terrorism. Rightstream Tuesdays with Daria Ann airs at 1 p.m. Eastern and welcomes authors in diverse genres, including romance, drama, military history, spirituality, and politics. We also speak social, discussing the benefits and pitfalls of social media platforms and the numerous and plentiful publishing formats now available with various experts in order to help other authors navigate through new technology to reach higher levels of success. During every broadcast, we welcome your calls at 347-945-7246. And of course, the chat room is always open. Can't listen live? No worries. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/rightstream to listen to the archives. And be sure to join us for our weekly Thursday Rightstream Twitter chat at 11 a.m. Eastern using the hashtag Rightstream on Twitter. Rejoice in the flow of creativity with the Rightstream Radio Network and the Rightstream Twitter chat.
Okay, everyone, and this is Daria Ann again live. I really hope you enjoyed that interview. If you were not able to tune in at 1 p.m., it will be archived here in just a few moments as soon as I get off the air. Again, just go to blogtalkradio.com/rightstream. And just to let you all know, on Sunday, this coming Sunday, which is the actual St. Paddy's Day, March 17th, our very own Lisa Tarvez, host of Just Believe, will be interviewing Dr. Karen Wyatt, MD. And Karen is the author of the book, What Really Matters, Seven Lessons for the Living,
from the stories of the dying. And this was inspired by her work with hospice. Lisa's a very inspiring person herself, so I know you're going to really enjoy that interview. And also this coming Monday, I'm not sure who his guests are, but John D. Gresham, military historian and journalist, will be hosting Military Monday, also at 1 p.m. And then this coming Tuesday, March 19th, I have two excellent guests lined up. Cherry Tigris, author of the incredible book Toilet Paper People, which is an autobiography of her life as an abused child. And let me tell you, you can visit my blogs, read my review at DariaDiGiovanni.com. But this book really affected me. I mean, I'm still thinking about it, and it's like a week later since I've read it. And Cherry's gonna share her amazing story, and you know, not just about the abuse, but just how her spirit was her spirit allowed her to rise above these just horrific circumstances and really create a full, thriving life for herself. So I'm excited about that. And then in the second half of the show on Tuesday, Quinn Barrett will be joining me as well. And she is a digital media expert and author, and she'll have a lot of great advice for aspiring authors and even, you know, already well-established authors. So I hope you'll tune in for that. In the meantime, have a wonderful afternoon. Have a great St. Patrick's Day weekend. And we'll see you here on Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Rightstream Radio Network for Just Believe with Lisa Tarvis. Take care, everyone.